Thanks very much for checking out this episode of Turning to Him. If you enjoy what you hear, feel free to subscribe to the channel, like the video, leave comments, share it with your friends, all the basic stuff. When you do things like that, it makes it easier for other people to find the channel and add goodness into their lives. Thanks again. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Turning to Him. My name is Zach Batty, and I am here with the amazingly famous Brigham Sunday. You probably recognize him from his YouTube stardom. Actually, you don't, but you might recognize his thumbprint from his YouTube stardom. Brigham, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be with me and talking with me tonight.
No problem. I'm excited.
We always start out by asking people to give a 30-second rundown of who you are and kind of your history and what you do.
Absolutely. My name is Brigham Sunday. I'm the oldest of seven. I've lived here in Utah for the last 20 plus years. I moved here from New York as a senior in high school, graduated from Layton High School, and I've been here ever since. I have four beautiful daughters. I have a wife of 23 years. And I run a video production company / animation studio with my brother. I've been doing that for about 10 years. Prior to that, I was a teacher and an educator, junior high and high schools. And yeah, just loving life.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on the long marriage and plentiful kids. And everything else. Yeah. That's great. Okay, so you said, did you grow up in New York or did you just move from New York?
No, we moved quite a bit. My dad worked for the church. He ran the adoption program for the church through LDS Family Services for decades until they got out of the adoption business. And so we moved around quite a bit. I went to, I was born here in Utah, moved to Arizona for a while, then to New Mexico, and then to New York, where I went to high school, most of my high school in New York. Not high school. I went to junior high in New York. Then I moved to Oklahoma for a couple years and then finished off at Layton High School. So we moved around a lot. My dad was transferred quite a bit for the church. And so finally ended up back in Utah. So,
Now you said you had six siblings. So there's seven kids, correct?
Seven kids, seven of us. Yep. All here in Utah. I'm the oldest of seven. Like I said, I work with my younger brother, Noah, and he and I have ran Storybox Studios for quite a while now.
But. Okay. What was growing up like with seven or six siblings moving all around?
Not many friends because we were constantly moving. And so our only friends were our siblings. And we were a very close and tight-knit family due to that. Not a lot of, church-related friends in that, particularly in the areas where we lived. It was so spread out. So we were the only members of the church in our schools. And so that made for an interesting dynamic. But it was, it was fun. It brought us close together and gave us kind of a hard shell on the back of us and in a good way, hard shell in a good way to, a lot of people coming at us with the gospel and being different like that. So we grew up a little bit different than everybody else. So,
yeah. Describe more the interesting dynamic that you alluded to.
Was that with friends kind of thing? Was that what I was talking about?
Yeah. And being the only members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in your schools oftentimes.
Yeah. The majority of the time in junior highs and high schools, we were the only members of the church. And so, I remember teachers calling me aside. I remember particularly, this was probably seventh grade, a history teacher in New York pulling me out and saying, "I've never met a Mormon. I thought you guys had horns," and all this bizarre stuff.
Really?
And I was like, "What are you talking about?" But he asked all these questions, and we ended up having dinner with he and his wife, with our family, which was, as a seventh grader, is bizarre. It's like, I don't know. I don't want to have dinner with my history teacher. But that kind of stuff, just very, very different. People not, I mean, we were unicorns, you know, in these places where we lived, which was kind of a cool experience, you know, to stand out and be different and be able to tell. And people, you know, stood up for you. It's interesting. You know, I didn't have to defend myself to my friends in New York or Oklahoma that I didn't drink or do certain things, because they would let everybody know, like, oh, don't, he doesn't drink. You know, they would defend you. So it was fun.
Yeah. Now, at that age, did you see that as a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I liked it. I liked being different. I saw it as you know, obviously as a young kid or a teenager, you want to fit in naturally. But growing up like that in those places, I don't know. It made me who I am, made me stronger. And I loved it. I loved being different. I loved walking into a room and being the only BYU fan in my, you know, amongst my sports fanatic friends in New York. And at the time back then, it was all about Ty Detmer and BYU, and we were winning all over the place. And so I was king of the world back in New York with my BYU jacket.
Sure. So, you know, I was speaking to some youth the other day and, you know, just talking about the idea of, you know, when your friends say like, oh, hey, don't tell that joke in front of Sally. She doesn't like that kind of stuff. You know, sometimes that's thrown at you like an insult, but you should take that as a compliment. Yeah. Like, hey, you've got a reputation that you don't want to hear that kind of garbage. And that should be a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that strength is what I felt growing up, you know, like, he doesn't do those things. Don't even ask him. So it made it easier, you know?
Yeah. Now I'm curious, because I think there might be some parallels between our two families. How old was your youngest sibling when you moved to Utah? It sounds like for kind of the last time and started to settle.
My youngest sibling was born while I was on my mission. So 20 years between us.
Okay. So did they go through the entire school system, you know, in the same house or the same school district?
They did once they got to Utah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's similar. So I'm the youngest in my family. There are six kids, and it sounds somewhat similar. For my older siblings, we moved around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And same thing, my oldest brother moved high schools when he was his senior year. Mm-hmm. And I went through the same school system first through 12. And kind of, it's almost two separate families.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, what took your father all over the place?
Just moving, different jobs.
Just different jobs.
Have you ever talked to your siblings about kind of the different ways in which you were raised and the, you know, the different families that you grew up in, so to speak?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like two opposite families. It's like, who raised you? Yeah, that's not mom. You know, that's the kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely. Very stark difference. So
that's funny. Okay, so you graduate high school, your senior year, you go to your last year of high school in a brand new school, graduate, all that. What happens next?
Next, I went on a mission to Peru, served over in Peru for a while, loved it, and came home, fiddled around with school for a little bit, bounced around different in and out of schools. It just didn't fit. School didn't fit for me, surprisingly, at that time. And dated, played around, eventually got married. That forced me back into school. Met my wife at Gold's Gym, of all places. So,
okay, very nice.
We were both going to Weber State at the time. Finished up Weber State. Took about 10 years. Oh, go ahead.
Did you always know that you wanted to do something creative?
I did. That's why I really struggled with school early on. Everyone, you know, kind of tells you, like, go to school, get a good job, you know, follow these paths and everything will turn out. And so every time I tried school, I'm like, this is not for me. I need to create. I need to do something different. But it's not paying. It doesn't pay. How do I support a family on this? And so I kept trying to shove that missing that puzzle piece in, and it just wasn't fitting. And then obviously when I got married, I'm like, I got to do something, you know. I don't have a very analytical mind. I struggled with math. I struggled with anything architectural, engineering, you know, anything like that. I was pulled towards like Shakespeare and literature and all the things that wouldn't pay you a dime. You know, I was pulled to writing and stories and story structure. And so eventually I settled on, well, I'm going to go teach. And so I finished my bachelor's at Weber, a double majored at Weber State in English and Spanish. And then I went and got my master's at Westminster in teaching and education. And I taught for a while. I went out to Wyoming, taught at Rollins High School for several years.
What did you teach?
I taught AP English and Spanish at Rollins High School.
Okay. So, I mean, these are not easy topics.
Yeah, no. And I also coached out there, coached basketball and soccer and some different things. And so it was fun experience, but we started missing family and we're trying to have a family. And so we moved back to Utah. This whole time I was writing with my brother. My brother went into film. And he was working on films like Napoleon Dynamite, Nacho Libre, and all these things. And we were working together on the side, writing stories and short films and entering, short film competitions around the country. And we had this vision of doing something together someday that involved storytelling. And meanwhile, I was teaching and I was quickly becoming burned out pretty quickly with teaching. Junior high here in Ogden, a couple junior highs here in Ogden. And, but while we were doing that, my brother and I just kept building, kept working together. He was doing video production. And then, but on the side, we were just building up our own content. And so we created what we called storybox.tv, okay, which was a streaming service back in the day. Back when VidAngel was first starting to come out and streaming services were just becoming a thing, Netflix was pulling out all their DVDs and starting to stream. House of, what was that, their first premiere? House of Cards, something House like that.
Cards, yeah.
Yeah, so they were just starting and we decided, hey, we're going to create a LDS streaming service in our basement while we both work our jobs. And so we did it. And in between classes, in between teaching, you know, seventh and eighth grade English classes with 5 minutes between bell time, I would jump on phone calls with movie execs from around the country and try to get some of their family friendly content to go up on our streaming platform. And over about 2 years, we amassed about 2,000 titles.
Wow.
On our platform, we had, you know, quite a few subscribers and things like that. And we didn't know what we were doing. Everyone told us, like, what are you guys doing? We're like, I don't know, but we're making something in the basement.
Yeah.
And anyway, I remember having some of these funny conversations with guys on my, you know, as a teacher, you get one period break. And so that's when I would schedule my calls with these execs and say, hey, we don't have any money to pay you, but if you give us your films, we'll do a revenue share and split some of this money. And anyway, our idea at the time was we wanted to create a streaming platform where we could eventually house some of our own creations and content. And obviously in the back of my mind, I was like, I need to quit this and do this full time, but there's no money in it. And so obviously I couldn't do that. My wife would have died. And so we just kept at it. And eventually we were approached by a company called Cinedigm out in California. And they offered to buy the company from us and all of our content and all of our licenses. And we never got super big. A lot of people didn't know about us. This is right around when VidAngel got really big. I mean, we were known in the industry, but we just didn't put a lot of money into marketing. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, yeah, let's sell this and let's do something different. So we sold that company, and that's when I quit my job as a teacher and decided to jump right in to video production and animation. And it was scary not having insurance and going through that whole process. This is about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And let's see, I jumped ship, and it was something creative. I had been praying like a maniac for years as a teacher. I didn't know how to take care of my family, and I wasn't making enough as a teacher. You know, even with a master's degree, I was making like, you know, $52,000 a year, you know, as a teacher. And my wife was struggling. Our kids were starting to struggle. And I just remember praying over and over, like, help me. I want to do something different. I want to do something creative. I want to put stuff out into the world. I can't work for somebody else.
Yeah.
And it happened. I mean, the Lord blessed me and blessed us and blessed our family. So we made that switch. And with that money that we had from the other business, we built up our video production company. We purchased a studio, an animation studio in Argentina. We currently have eight full-time employees in Argentina. We have an office in Argentina in Buenos Aires with a big sign that says Story Box. And that's a story in and of itself. But we still do some corporate work. We've been doing corporate work for quite a long time, corporate animation, corporate videos. But we've also been able to create our own content, which is what we love. And that's kind of where we're at now. And we can get into that later. But we're building back up a streaming service again, which has always been our dream. We were a little too early to the game back when we first started it. But we're back in again. And so that's kind of where we're at now in a nutshell. So I still go to school. I still take classes and currently working on another bachelor's degree in marketing, digital marketing, just for fun. I also teach a couple nights a week at Ogden Tech Center. I also teach some classes at Weber State, just for fun as well. And I'm creating again. And so that's where I'm at with my brother and I. We have a little office in Ogden. We get to work and we say a prayer every day. We study our scriptures together. And then we create. And we have a toy company. We sell books. We have all sorts of different little businesses that we start and run. And we're spending most of the day writing content or writing stories and scripts, in particular with this Thumb Follow Me stuff, which has been a lot of fun. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
I love it. I love, there are so many branches that we could walk down and explore. Talk to me about, have you ever wondered why, I'm making some assumptions here, but I hope they're safe and correct me if I'm wrong. Mm. You had righteous desires. I mean, this whole time you clearly wanted to create content that helped lift the world, helped bring light into the world. That was your goal. Why do you think, and you were praying consistently for this goal, you were exercising faith. Why do you think why did the Lord wait so long to answer that prayer?
That's a great question. I've thought about that quite a bit, but looking back in retrospect, I see now the amount of things I've learned. You know, Nephi and his family, Lehi and their family, they're wandering around the desert for eight or 9 years. I mean, why do they have to wander around in the desert for that long in the wilderness? Couldn't they have? I've been to Israel, another job, I led tours to Israel. That's another story. But from Jerusalem to the edge of the seaside, like, it's like a 4-hour drive. Like, that's nothing. Those guys were wandering around in that little tiny space for 8-9 years. That's what I did. But during that time, we were growing. I was learning. I had a crash course in script writing. I had a crash course in marketing, crash course. I learned so much in dealing with these execs, in you know, working with our team in Argentina, in scheduling these phone calls between periods during the day. Like, had I had Yeah, it was. I mean, I feel like that's how God works. You know, that's how God teaches us. That's how He prepares people. That's how He allows you to grow. So I wouldn't change it for anything. I'm older. You know, I have I'm kind of a late bloomer with things of getting into my, you know, career path and things like that. And I always think like, man, I see some people that have chosen different paths that have led to a lot of money. And, but I've also seen a lot of people that have chosen paths where they're not happy. And I did choose a path that doesn't lead to a lot of money, but I tell you what, like, I am so blessed and so happy. And I love my work. I love going to work. I love being creative, imaginative, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I'm thankful for that. And it allows me to be creative. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard. You know, it's hard to raise a family and have insurance and to provide for, you know, our family of six with an animation studio. You know, I would never tell someone to go that path. But sometimes people have that inside them where it's like, man, I can't survive unless I'm creating. I have to do that. And so there's something deeper. And a lot of us, and we all might have that to some extent. And so,
yeah, I love hearing that because I think that's so hard to accept and to have that faith, whether it's, Heavenly Father, this isn't the career that I want. And I have a righteous desire to help build thy kingdom.
Yeah.
I want kids and I can't have kids. And I think I'd be a good parent. I want to get married, but and I can't find the right spouse. Why are my righteous desires that are part of the plan of salvation? Why are they not being answered? How come I'm not being fulfilled? I'm not trying to be selfish here. I want to do what the prophet's asking me to do.
Yeah.
And I think so many times, for our benefit, the Lord says, not yet. I'm still working on you. Sometimes maybe I'm working on other things and trying to get other variables in place. But I feel like, at least in my experience, most of the time, in hindsight, I can look back and see Him working on me. And I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready for that thing. That's a good desire. I'm just not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
And He still has to polish me a little bit.
You're right. You're right. Patience. Yeah. It's still happening. Still being polished.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Always. I think that'll probably happen for the next, I don't know, 8 million years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
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 Okay. Why Storybox Studios? What's the story behind that?
Let's see. I'm trying to remember how old I was. I was probably like 26 or so, 25. It was my brother's wedding. I love to write. I love to be creative. My brother and I were making short films and doing those kind of things. My brother presented me with we're at the wedding. My brother brought me a little excerpt from like a story structure. It was like a document that broke down like Star Wars. It broke down Star Wars in a way that based on myth and the story structure, a hero's journey and all those kind of things. And I saw that and it completely rocked my world. Having gone through college and things like that, for some reason, and loving literature and Shakespeare and everything, I had never really been presented with the mythos or the, you know, the hero's journey architecture within, you know, that exists in the world. And I read that document, it just shocked me. I couldn't get it out of my mind. I was like, you mean there's a structure to this stuff? And I started to read and study everything there was to know on the topic, all the authors and you know, these great authors of the past and Aristotle and Plato and all these guys that wrote about, you know, Aristotle's Poetics and all these things that it wrote about story. And it just hit me on a deeper level that God understands these deep story principles more than anybody on earth. And I started to relate to that on a soul level with story structure. And so my brother and I started getting way too deep into story structuralists and story theories, and we're like, man, let's create a company just based on stories and the power of stories and why people remember them. And so we settled on Storybox, which is a long way to get to how we got Storybox, but that's kind of our core of who we are, and our own stories that we have, the stories that make us who we are, the power of storytelling, the power of film, the power of books, those kind of things. And so we created Storybox. Yeah.
Great. It sounds like you
for quite a while. And we, like I said, we tell stories with, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm stepping on you. I think we've got a bad connection, so I didn't mean to step all over you. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like you are a storyteller, and you don't necessarily care what medium you choose, whether that's written or film or anything else. Is that true, or do you have a preference?
Well, we have narrowed it down over the years, but we eat up stories. I mean, every single day, my brother and I at lunchtime, we're watching a film and we're breaking it down structurally. If you were to hear us, you would never want to watch a movie with us, because there's very few good movies out there anyway. And so we eat up stories. And so our medium is visual storytelling. We love visual storytelling. And that's the direction we're heading now. And specifically visual storytelling that moves, inspires, or motivates. And so, and that's gospel related. I mean, we're diving into that world now too. And so we want to tell stories. We want to tell good stories that move people, that change people's lives, kind of like what you're doing. I mean, you're a storyteller yourself, and you're allowing others to tell their story, to motivate other people to share. And there's power in that.
Yeah. Do you feel like there is increasing demand for family-centered, even if people don't know it, eternal truths, stories? Do you feel like that demand is increasing?
Oh, absolutely. In this ever-expanding world of the glut of media that we have now, with so many conflicting messages, those messages are superseding those deeper messages that need to be taught, those soul messages that need to be taught about being better, doing better. And those are the stories that we have in the scriptures. I mean, these soul lessons that we learn from, you know, Enos or Jacob or, you know, King Benjamin and things like that. I mean, there's deep, deep concepts there that are being stripped out of family content and replaced with other messaging that is confusing to children and confusing to other people. And so, absolutely, I could talk for hours on that topic of how media has changed, how it's continuing to change, you know, how AI is changing storytelling, how all sorts of different things. So,
yeah.
But yes.
okay, let's shift gears a little bit. Thumb Follow Me. How did that come to pass?
So Thumb Follow Me is a little fun little YouTube channel that my brother and I started that is fun, quirky, silly cartoons for kids or adults that has to do a little bit with Come Follow Me and the lessons of Come Follow Me. We felt we wanted to tell stories for our kids. My brother has 6 sons and I have 4 daughters. And so when we get together, there's 10 kids under the age of 13 running around like crazy. We wanted to create fun content for them that we felt wasn't being created. And so we dove into the world of children's LDS content because there's some good content out there. I want to be careful here. There's some great content out there, spiritual content. But there wasn't a lot of content that was silly, goofy, and spiritual at the same time. And this was a way for my brother and I to showcase our personalities, which are silly and goofy, but at the same time, stress the importance of scriptures and the power of these stories that we're having. I think there are so many comedic moments in the Book of Mormon and so many powerful stories in there. And a lot of times we can take things a little too serious. And I don't want to be irreverent or anything like that, but I think there are moments, I mean, you can chuckle a little bit when you think about, you know, Nephi and his brothers going back to get the daughters of Ishmael. You know, I think there could be some fun moments there, or, you know, on the boat, or whatever you're doing. Right now we're writing Enos and his story. And so these were real people that had real experiences, that had real personalities. And we just wanted to tell fun, silly stories that kids would remember and say, you know what? Nephi was a real person. He was awesome. And he probably had some fun times with his brothers. And so we created these fun, silly stories and funny songs to hopefully get stuck in kids' heads. We had a lot of kids that were singing, what's that silly shark song that everyone sings?
Mama Shark?
Baby Shark.
Baby Shark.
You know, yes. Kids were singing that kind of stuff, and you're like, and we're like, you know what? Why can't we make funny, silly songs that get stuck in heads? Where kids would ask, like, Mom, Dad, tell me more about, you know,
Nephi. Moving day.
Yeah, his family leaving Jerusalem. Like, I want to know about this. Like, this is funny. And so that's where we're at, and that's what we're creating. And it's made to just, you know, give a little laugh during the week for parents, just something funny. Or maybe kids would be like, hey, instead of watching another, you know, episode of Cocomelon, I'll watch some scripture stuff that's funny. That's silly. Yeah. It makes me ponder or think about things, how things might have been. And so that's our direction with that. Obviously we have bigger goals with that as well, but that's where we're at with Thumb Follow Me. And it's, we're just having a blast with it. We're making funny songs, and our upcoming songs that we have are just, I don't know, they're hilarious to me. So I can't wait to share them. So,
well, you have brought much laughter into our house, and this certainly isn't a media tour or anything, but if anybody's listening and you don't know what we're talking about, you need to go to YouTube and search for Thumb Follow Me. And it's hilarious. My 17-year-old down to my 8-year-old love it. I love watching them. They're so awesome. Funny. The first time we saw Nephi with a little pot gut, that's what really sealed the deal. That's when we're like, okay, this is going to be part of our family now. This is going to be a thing.
That's our logo. Yeah, a little pot gut Nephi.
It's so funny.
Just along with that, we've started manufacturing toys, Nephi toys and little kid toys. We're really disappointed with the toy world that's offered right now in the LDS market. And, you know, and not to, you know, rip on other, but when you go to a Desert Book and go to their toy section, it's very, very limited. And so we're building and making toys. We have fun little apps we're working on and building, and coloring books, and all sorts of different things that we're working on now and trying to build up. We want kids to be excited about the scriptures. I love the scriptures so much. I can't stop reading them. And I every single time it's different. I just want kids and families to realize how fun they are, you know? And
yeah,
I always go back to that, you know, that famous Mark Twain quote who said, you know, it's chloroform in print, the Book of Mormon, and how it puts people to sleep. And I just disagree. I just think it's so vast, amazing, and the personalities are incredible. And so that's what we want people to get excited about it. So,
well, going back to something that you said earlier, certainly the goal is to never be irreverent. The goal is to never minimize or trivialize these things. However, I think that if I sound like similar to you, for me, the gospel makes my life not only filled with joy, but it makes it fun. Also, I have fun living the gospel. And I think sometimes in an effort to instill reverence, we can go too far. And that's where it's very easy to draw a line of, okay, church is for Sunday, fun, even wholesome fun is for Monday through Saturday, but that's not churchy. Church is folding my arms, sitting quietly. That's what the gospel is about. And I would rebuttal that and say, certainly a time and a place, absolutely, to be reverent and quiet and feel the spirit and whisper. But also, I personally believe that God has a sense of humor. I think that he loves a good chuckle. And I think that he smiles and laughs at his kids, just like I smile and laugh at my kids and get down and wrestle with them on the floor and that kind of stuff. So
absolutely.
I love it.
And that's what we love. And that's what we want to do. And the response we've been getting has been fantastic. We have a very high level member of the CES department who helps us with our content to make sure we're aligned. You know, it's not done through the church, obviously, what mm-hmm. we're doing, and he's not working in the capacity of a institute director or anything like that. He does it on the side, but we're very cognizant of making sure our content is aligned, but be fun and laughable and silly at the same time. And so, yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. Where in your life did you feel your testimony start to take hold?
So I had a very poignant, powerful experience happened to me when I was 14. I had just moved to Oklahoma, which was a difficult move, leaving my friends behind, going to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, which is right smack in the middle of the Bible Belt. You know, Oral Roberts Baptist University was right down the road, and it was a tough move. And finding friends was hard. My testimony at the time was pretty small. I think I a lot of my parents, as most of us do, and was taking a lot of things for granted. My parents signed me up for EFY. Did you ever go to an EFY,
Zach? I did, yes. Yep.
Did you? Oh, nice. They signed us up for an EFY, which was at Missouri State University, which was found in Springfield, Missouri, which is 2.5 hours from Broken Arrow. And we got on a bus, went to EFY. It was my first EFY, and especially for youth conference. Didn't know what to expect. And we had a fantastic counselor. He's a big Samoan guy. I don't remember his name. Played football for Ricks at the time. Back then, they had a football team. And just a big Samoan guy. And it was awesome. I had fun. I had so much fun. And we had a particular what did they call them? Devotional at the time. And it was on Christ. And none of us knew what we were getting into at this, but we all walked into that room, this devotional on Free State University. Big Samoan guy, he's about 6'4", 320 pounds, solid as. And we all sat down and we could tell he was serious at this point. And asked for 3 volunteers. And I raised my hand. I was one of them. My buddy raised his hand. Another guy raised his hand. And then he asked my buddy to come up to him and spit in his face. And this is not a lesson I would particularly recreate. But he asked this guy to spit in his face. And then he asked my buddy to come up and spit in his face. And
did they do it?
At this point, he had eventually, after much prodding and yelling and this, telling him to do it. And then he told me to get up and he told me to hit him in the face. Obviously I'm like, no, I'm not going to hit you. But eventually I did. And eventually it was back and, you know, slapping his face pretty hard back and forth as hard as I could eventually. Cause he was, and then down scared to death. Like, what in the world is going on? And he brought up a picture of Christ, and then he asked us to, you know, to do the same to him. And at that moment, the spirit was so powerful and hit us all so strong. In my entire life, I've never felt the spirit like I did that day. As he walked around the room showing us that picture of Christ, and then we proceeded to have a lesson about Christ and his atonement. And the spirit was unbound in that moment. And I felt things I hadn't felt before in my life. And again, I would never, tell someone to recreate that demonstration. And it wasn't necessarily the hitting and things like that, but that I thought a lot about this. That particular counselor had prepared mentally and spiritually for that event and brought the spirit through his testimony, not necessarily the actions that we were doing. And it was so powerful, it changed me. And just like Jacob and Enos, in that moment, I became unshaken. And nothing could change what I felt at that moment. And it changed my life. I went home that day, or not that day, but after the EFY, and I was a different person. I treated my siblings differently. I treated my family differently. It was a spiritual awakening for me that I have never, what's the word? I've never had anything. I mean, I've experienced great things since then, but it shocked me to my core. And it was something that has stayed with me my entire life. And I cannot deny the power that I felt that day for my Savior, Jesus Christ, and my love for him. And so that kind of shaped me of who I am today. All in that little tiny office room in Missouri State University. There was probably about seven of us boys in there. And I always wondered how it affected them, but man, it had an effect on me. So powerful.
Wow. That is a great story. That's a powerful story.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just never know. You know, if you're going to be a Sunday school teacher and you've taught these same kids for 40 weeks in a row,
yep.
Never know. This lesson might be the one that changes somebody.
Yep. 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 And it was powerful, powerful moment. And early on, I always thought it was the hitting and spitting, but I've learned over the years there was something deeper there, that preparation on his part. That really set the tone in his testimony. So, but yeah, powerful experience. So.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I need to fact check myself, because it'll bother me if I don't. My wife and I have had this discussion. I haven't been to an EFY. What I went to, we finally figured it out, because I always told people, yes, I have. No, I haven't. I went to a big multi-stake youth conference at BYU. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's, I'm just thinking about that experience. That's a very deep experience.
It was great. It was tailored to a group of boys, obviously, that were rough and tumble and, playing football every which way we could be. And so he was a football player and we respected him a lot. And he really, prepared something powerful for us that day. Yeah.
Now, that's a fantastic experience. And I think a lot of people have big moving experiences like that, but then eventually you come home from EFY. Eventually you're back. You find yourself back in a locker room. You find yourself back in wherever you find yourself. And sometimes those experiences fade. What did you do to help that experience not fade for you?
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. That's a great, as we know from the scriptures with Laman and Lemuel, and they saw the same things Nephi saw, that didn't do much for them. And so it's about nourishing that and wanting that. And so that love that I felt that day was so powerful that I wanted to feel that and have wanted to feel that throughout my entire life. And that is what I've sought. And it's through those little feelings and power of God, and the spirit of me seeking that out again, and how do I feel that? And that's something I've learned over the years, how do I get those feelings back? Well, it's through obedience and to the gospel and obeying certain laws and exercising that faith. But my whole life, I've been able to recreate that feeling and to have that feeling of love. There's been many times where I just pray out loud and say, Father in heaven, I need a hug. I need another hug. And that feeling always comes back. That exact same feeling that was felt that day, spiritual hug of power. And it's that's what I seek, and that's what I continue to seek. So,
yeah. Brigham, I have so appreciated you spending the time here and sharing your journey and your experiences and that testimony building experience. As we conclude here, is there anything that you would say, any advice you would give, or any last thought that's on your mind that you just want to get out?
I don't think so. I think the big takeaway is just to, you know, I don't want to be super cliche and, you know, say follow your dreams kind of stuff, but I think a lot of us have something deeper in us, an itch, a desire, a righteous desire. And I would just say, listen to that desire and work with Heavenly Father with that desire, and he will make it happen. And so my desire was always to be able to share my creativity and imagination with the world, but at the same time doing it in a way to bring others to Christ. And that's what I feel like I'm finally able to do, and it's beautiful, and I love it. And so listen to that inner desire, whatever that may be, that righteous desire. 'Cause man, he will make your weakness become strong. If I could look back 20 years, you know, if I could tell myself like, hey, you're going to be doing this, I would not have believed it. And so, yeah, listen to that inner voice.
Always good advice. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for spending the time with me tonight.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks, Zach.